initially about the kind of the framework for the time that we'll be spending together before engaging with the way the material of it. The theme of contemplating death is, I think, a very important one, a powerful one, and it can be challenging equally as it can be transformative. So it's important that we bring a certain respect for what we're engaging with here. This is one of the fundamental questions of human life. What and how do we engage with this topic, with this territory? And so in terms of being together for this time, there's some guidelines that I'd like to ask. And these are familiar, I imagine, to many of you. Before I go further with this, I just want to ask, and it's okay, I think it was indicated in the information on the website, which I'm aware not everyone always reads, no judgment, there we are, but I just want to check, of that, one of the things that was mentioned was that it would be, I think, suitable for people who have some experience, exposure, or involvement with insight meditation or Buddhist meditation. I just want to check, is there anyone here who, that's right, you're not going to get tossed out, but who doesn't have that experience or exposure? Because we'll be doing some meditation, and it'll be useful for me to know if you don't. Okay, so relatively new to, have you done anything of meditation before? Okay, so the first thing to know is you don't have to sit on the floor. I guess you've got that. If it works for you, that's fine. If not, a chair can be fine too. Okay, just in terms of finding a way for your body to be. A good amount of the time we'll be using the supportive environment of being in silence together as a way of allowing the contemplations to go more deeply into our hearts, into our minds, into our being. And so with that, again, there will be some times when we'll be reflecting, exploring, or maybe inquiring with questions together in different ways. But the intention really is that it's not going to be a sort of a casual interactive environment, perhaps through the day. But at the end of the day, we'll see where we've got to. So for the time that we're together, I'd like to ask that you undertake this intention to really be with yourself. Now, mostly that's just going to happen by the way we're going to be doing what we're doing. But there's something about also making that intention, that this, again, it's an expression of a certain kind of commitment and sincerity. And being in silence isn't about withdrawing from other people. In fact, engaging with other people will be part of what we do in different points. But something about actually turning towards oneself. To be in silence is very much about being in contact with one's experience and oriented more towards that inner experience than towards the more outer and often surface or superficial interactive engagement that we might otherwise have as part of our kind of normal way of being with other people. So in that, if things touch you or strike you, not just casually commenting to someone, you know, about what your experience is or asking about theirs, just for now, and I'll say if and when that might be different, but for now that we're together in silence and in that way invited to be really with ourselves, with yourself, with your own experience, is what that means. And so as I just name one or two things like this, I like to feel the sense of what that means, to let that land. Okay, we're here with ourselves, because we all are, and we will die by ourselves in the end. So there's a very simple connection between that turning towards being with ourselves and this territory that we are going to explore together. I also just want to name very briefly that the, again, as it is expressed in the description for the weekend, that the sense of the material and the territory I'd like to cover, and that we will cover is, it's got a certain wholeness to it. So I know a number of you, and a sort of a moderate number here, have come just for today. And there's a way in which, from my point of view, the material will not be complete at the end of the day. Now, I guess you're aware of that, and trust you are. It's not that it will somehow, you'll be left in some place where it's not okay to be. But what might be important is actually to look at where that goes at the end of the day, and I'll see how that works to make some space to have a little time with those who are ending at the end of the day. But I also just want to be aware in that, that if you're relating from that perspective or point of view, that really it is a weekend. It is a two-day event. And I'm sure you know that, but I just want to say that because it may feel... It'll have its effect. That's all I can say. And hopefully that won't be problematic. But if you have any concern about that, perhaps we can touch on that at the end of the day again. I'm also aware of being here very much in the, I guess, middle of the city. I don't know if it's the middle, but it feels like the middle, or in the very much the midst of. And the traffic sort of on the road, and various other groups meeting in the building. And that's actually not a bad thing in this context, it seems to me, that we're here in the midst of our lives. So the other point I just want to mention for the beginning of the day, which is again a standard part of all of these kind of events, I think, run through London inside, but I just want to express the intention for this time is that this be something that really serve our well-being, that contribute to our own understanding and development and ability to skillfully engage with the truth of our lives, and equally the truth of our mortality. And that with that, that having an intention of well-wishing, of care, of concern, and therefore an intention not to cause harm, so far as we can avoid it, to other beings. And I think you're not needing kind of to be instructed in this, but there's just something about naming that we come into an environment and that we create an environment together that's intentional. And one of the factors of that intentionality is a sense of respect, of care, for others, and a wish to not cause harm, and hopefully also to contribute to the welfare, the well-being of others. And for me, Dharma teachings of the Buddha, and the teachings from which much of the material of this weekend will be drawn, are very much founded on that and concerned with the well-being of all of life and the kind of respect and sensitivity to what it means to be alive. So for some interesting reason, I notice a quote appearing, coming, saying, you could say this. I'd like to begin with some meditation, but we have a kind of interesting relationship with this topic, don't we? You know, there's a way in which it can be interesting or compelling, or we might find ourselves drawn towards thinking, reflecting, contemplating on death. And at the same time, there can be a kind of a, not quite sure, And it's certainly something we find in our culture, an ambivalence, our society, an ambivalence around this territory. And I think it was Woody Allen who said, you may be familiar with this, you know, something like, I'm not afraid of dying. I just don't want to be there when it happens. And there's this way in which we kind of absent ourselves from the territory sometimes. Not even the when it happens, but even just the contemplating. Even just the actually letting ourselves be right here. One of the reasons we find it difficult to be right here is that in the immediacy of our life, there is a vulnerability which points us to, which speaks to us of that we could say, ultimate vulnerability that is represented by what we call death, what we understand by or associate with that concept. And reflecting upon this is, as I said, a primary theme or topic of the Dharma teachings. And in fact, it's been called sometimes the most important reflection that we could bring. So, having taken a little time to arrive with ourselves, to just feel more fully here perhaps, or more aware of the ways in which we're not fully here, which is part of being more fully here. I'd like to speak a bit about what might bring us here. And perhaps just before I do, is there anyone who, in terms of their own arriving, feels it would be important or useful for them to express why they're here, what's brought them to this day, as opposed to going to the beach or shopping or lying in one's backyard or on one's sofa? Does anyone have any sense of the need to... You don't have to. I just really wanted to see if someone feels like they'd like to name, if it feels important for you, because I'm aware that for some of you there may be something that's very alive about this topic and this territory in your life right now. And whether or not you feel the need to speak it, if it's there, or if something of that is there, just to let yourself know and be in touch with that. And I am really fine if no one wishes to speak in that space, but equally you're welcome to if you would like to, but no pressure there. Just seeing, okay, yeah, because I know when I turn my attention to this topic, I become aware of the places in which it's been alive for me in recent times. And I was just a few days ago, in fact, what's today? Saturday, so on Tuesday, attending a funeral, and with a friend who'd died just on the last weekend, and who days before that I'd sat in a hospital beside, and he invited me to put my hand on his chest. And his chest was where a tumour was pushing through his ribs at the same time as it was compressing his lungs in the other direction. And I was very touched that he said, "Would you like to feel?" And I said, "Would you want, or is that something you'd like?" And he actually did want me and also my partner Catherine, who was there, to make contact with him in that way. It was very touching and beautiful, and also incredible, because neither he nor I knew then that he would be dead less than a week later. In fact, he was a little surprised when the doctor had said, "You need to talk to your wife about arrangements." He said, "You mean already?" And we didn't know. It could have gone on for quite a bit longer. But I still have the sense, as I sit here, and just the sitting beside Colin, and he wasn't a young man, but he wasn't so old, and just, oh, wow, okay. This is his body doing something which is going to end his body's existence. It's his body growing here in a form that we call a tumor, cancer. His very own cells, it seemed. And Colin, as we know or knew him, is no longer. He was there, and I can feel the sense of sitting beside him. And you may be with such things in yourselves.
I booked this some time ago, and in terms of transition, there's a building just over there, you can't quite see it, where I've been working for 8.5 years, and I finished last week, so that's the end of that. But as it happens, my uncle, the youngest of four, my dad's little brother, and all the rest are all gone. His funeral is on Monday, so I have to leave early on Sunday to go. So I haven't seen him for years, but it's the close of that generation. So it's interesting to me that this is the kind of cusp of that end and this other end as well, this just by chance.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to try and repeat the contents of what people share for the recording, but just acknowledging that there can be, in a way, the death of an individual, but there's also, in a way, we see markers of something larger, like a generation or a sense of all of that group, in a way, of whatever group that might be, in a family or some other situation. We feel an ending. Yeah.
Drawn to.
Can people hear at the other end? Yeah, good.
The need for a daily practice which focuses me and puts a frame around my choices in my life,
mm-hmm.
which remind me that I am mortal and that I am. There's a frame around what I choose, what my priorities are, I think I do like Woody Allen most of the time. I want to be somewhere else. So I'd like to stay real, to find a way of staying real.
Right. So there's that interest at the same in staying real in one's life
and in my body.
In your body. And seeing also the challenge in doing that.
Yeah.
And this territory, the contemplation of death, is really one of the most powerful vehicles for exactly what you're asking or interested in there. Yeah. And that's something I'll speak more about for sure.
I have massive fears of death as a child. Massive, I would call it death anxiety now, from being very, very young. And my whole life has been, in a way, an exploration of death. I'm now, in the last year, I've been training to become an end of life doula. And I've kind of gone on a whole journey with those fears, and now I've been sort of moved through them.
Okay.
And so I volunteer with terminal people. Yeah. And just find it most amazing work. And so anything like this is like a great talk.
Sorry, the last words?
Anything like for me when I saw this, it was just like, yes.
I'll bring it on. I just processed what you said. Yeah, so yeah, yeah.
I'm very aware of the work that Stephen Levine's been doing. I've been reading Stephen Levine for quite a few years and wanting to incorporate some of what he does, but it's difficult to know how to do that.
Sure. Yeah. So that kind of being in contact with a sense of fear or anxiety with regard to death through a significant chunk of your life, it seems, and sounds like there's been some movement with that. Yeah, which I'm glad to hear. I just want to name for you and for anyone else, if it feels as we go through the days that you come under pressure from something that feels more than you can handle in terms of that kind of fear, it's really important that you let me know, and that you respect yourself in terms of this isn't something we need to push ourselves into in any way that's kind of forcing or not sensitive and respectful to what's an appropriate pace, I would say. Now, you've all brought yourself here, so there's some openness to the territory, I'm imagining. But we don't know what we'll encounter. But I trust that we can meet it and find ways to meet it appropriately. Yeah. And in terms of the doula role too, in a way, midwifing people's dying instead of, you know, the traditional association is with the midwifing of birth, and yet birth and death in that way, those transitions really bear being accompanied. So happy to hear of what you're doing. Someone here?
Yeah, like the first lady who spoke, I signed up for this quite a while ago because I find topic very compelling and very profound, although also have the kind of push-pull at times that you describe. But then, likewise, it seems unbelievably apt to be here because on Monday I'll be giving a eulogy for a dear friend and former business partner who's died recently. So it just feels really supportive to myself to kind of enter into the process rather than there's lots of ways I could do it, like fear of public speaking and anxiety about such a huge responsibility, et cetera, et cetera. but I find it really supportive to be here and just kind of engage with what really matters, which is what's happening to him, what happened to me, what it's kind of all about. So I just feel very grateful really for the timing.
Great, thank you. So again, people hearing okay? Yeah, good. In a way, it's real in our lives and close. And interestingly, you know, that survey I think they did in America quite some years ago now of what people are really afraid of, and you know, death came second. What people were really scared of was public speaking. And yet, interestingly, it's true. Interestingly, when we turn towards, actually directly towards the contemplation of it, it actually puts such other things in their place. And actually we say, oh yeah, you know, some, you could say, risk of social embarrassment or lack of, you know, doing it perfectly actually isn't on the same scale. And yet, of course, respecting where it's true for oneself. Yeah, thank you. So there'll be further opportunity. I'd like to kind of pick up and speak a little. I'm aware that if you need to shuffle or move a little bit while we're in here, please feel free to do what you need to do. But what I'd like to ask, which I didn't say, is if you have a mobile phone or other such communication device, please could you turn it off, make it silent. Ideally, stop it from receiving messages and calls. Not just be silent, but tell it to ignore those things until the end of the day, because that will really serve and support being with this process that we could easily be drawn out of and therefore not have as useful or powerful for us as it can be. So as I said, the reflection on death, the contemplation of death as a primary Dharma theme. The Buddha spoke of this again and again and again. It was something he kept returning to, and which was very much at the inception or the beginning and the motivation of his own journey. The sense of when we start to become interested in spirituality, when we become interested in what it means to be alive and to really start to move in that direction, I think the reality of death is one of the things that perhaps supports us in that we see that we're not here forever. And the Buddha in his own journey, that encounter with death that's, you know, spoken of, and his realization, whether it was literally that he had never seen or heard of such a thing of dying for 26 years, which is a little hard to believe because that's the way the tradition relates it, or whether it was really that at the age of 26 he saw, he heard, he got something about death that shifted his whole life, his whole orientation, from being just someone in the circumstances of his world, as we all are, to someone who was urgently concerned with what it means to be alive and how or what makes sense for our life, how to live in the face of a reality where we are not here forever. And in this way, we talk about, in the Buddha's teachings, we talk about death as a heavenly messenger, as something that comes to us, speaking to us of that which we need to be most concerned about. Which isn't necessarily just the fact of death itself, but the way in which it sheds light on our life, the way in which it shows us or speaks to us of what is important for us, for each of us, for you, for me, and for everyone else too, whether or not we're aware of that. And so his journey, his seeking in the world and in his life and in himself for freedom, for understanding, for realization, was very much spurred, inspired and driven by the confrontation, the engagement with mortality, with death. And so we can even just at this point in the beginning of a weekend, or at this point in our life, be just reflecting, you know, what is it that moves us in our life? What is our motivation? What are our intentions? What do we hold as important in life? I'm not suggesting there are specific answers here. So there may be important territories that are relevant to us all, or most of us. But just letting yourself, you know, what is it that I'm in touch with when I make my choices, when I engage with my life? Just being curious about that, being interested. Because the reality is that mortality, death, what this represents for us is something that our culture quite actively engages in disguising, actively engages in kind of sort of tidying up, almost sort of in a subtle way making it disappear. You know, we hear about people being killed on the news all the time, but it's always in a certain way in relationship to how it shouldn't really have happened this way. In terms of, you know, it was due to some aberrant act of violence, whether criminality or sort of state military activity, or it's to do with some kind of accident where someone was driving or flying and it went wrong. And it's always that sense of it's the outcome of something that kind of went wrong. So even when we hear about it, we don't hear about it as, oh, this is the most absolutely normal, universal, and inevitable thing that we could talk about, that we could reflect on. And, you know, there's a way in which we, even if we let ourselves make contact with it, we sort of hold back from it a little bit. And it's useful to just stop and think, okay, what ways do I hold back from this? What ways can I bring myself into contact with this? And I think quite a few of you are familiar with the retreat centre Gaia House in Devon, where we regularly are running retreats through the year. And it was, in a way, the group of teachers connected with that. They were also the foundation for the London Insight teachings and that. And that one of the things that Gaia House in its current location has, and that one of the reasons why Gaia House is where it is because there's a graveyard on the grounds. And when this particular property was up for sale, it's interesting because there were three groups interested. One was Gaia House, one was wanting to make a sort of like a family sort of holiday camp, and the other was wanting to use it to create a an old people's home, an elderly retirement home. And the nuns who had the venue, this what was an old convent for many years before we had it, were wanting to sell it and needing to sell it. And the three different bidders, of those three, we're pretty sure the Gaia House actually offered less than the other two to move from our small vicarage a couple of miles away. But we were really keen on the idea that there was a graveyard. It was like, that's great. They're actually burying people in the soil right here. And part of what happened was that it became obvious that the old people's home didn't really want a graveyard on site, because that's not what you want to give as a message when someone's going to their probably place they will live the last period of their life. The last thing you want to do is to let them know how it's going to end. And it's interesting, isn't it? And likewise, a family fun camp, you know, with a graveyard, well, a little bit of sort of excitement and danger is all right for the kids, but actually facing that, no. So it's really interesting to me how, as a result of seeing that we, Gaia House, a Dharma, a Buddhist practice, Dharma meditation organization, actually valued this, was actually how we ended up getting it, and on the basis of a lower offer than what others would have been willing to pay, so long as they could just cover that thing up. And we said, no, we're happy to have it there. In fact, there have been some burials since we had it there. Well, at least one that I know of. It's interesting, isn't it? You know, I kind of wondered how much we look for or seek out that sort of thing. It's so close around us. And again, just referring to Gaia House, you know, several years ago now, we had the offer of a skeleton, a real human skeleton to have at the center. And this is a very common thing in monasteries in Asia, that there will be skeletons that sometimes the nuns or the monks will, when they die, say, I'd like you to just have my skeleton on show for people. And it's kind of interesting how much discomfort and, in fact, opposition there was in the trust body around the idea when the teacher said, oh, we'd like to have a skeleton on display, but that'll scare people away, that'll turn them off, it'll, you know, and it's like, but isn't this what we want people to consider? That very quick response, even, so I say this because even at a retreat centre concerned with such things, the response of, oh, no, no, it might make people feel uncomfortable. I was teaching there just a couple of weeks ago and commenting on and just wondering, you know, has anyone been into the room where the skeleton sits? And it sits cross-legged. And you can just detect in the room there's a smell that's been there since the skeleton was there. It's about 100 years old, that skeleton, we think. Still reasonably together. There's a smell that's the smell of old bones. A little bit of cartilage still there, rather dry. And just asking, you know, have people been in there? And I didn't get a head count, you know, the sort of have you not? But then, you know, just reflecting, and as one could right now, oh, you know, one might at first thought say, well, there isn't a skeleton in here. It would be nice to bring it with me, I thought, and sit it here, you know, and actually, oh, on the seat beside me, you know, hand the notes. But actually, at another level, there's 40 skeletons in the room already. But do we see them? Like, we're right in the presence of skeletons all the time. But they're wrapped in, first of all, fabrics, and then flesh. And yet they're very clearly here. They're very clearly here. So we're kind of being asked to look a little deeper, to look a little closer when we go into this charity, and just really starting to allow ourselves to face the way in which, for the most part, it's easy to not quite let it in, you know? And it's important we don't judge ourselves for this. There's, as I said, a lot of encouragement and support around us for not letting it in, for not actually allowing our life to be informed by what is most important in all sorts of ways. And one of these is the fact that we are not here forever. And so again, we may have had contact with this. I remember, I think it was the first person who I knew who died. And I can still see his face looking around, it's interesting, looking around the corner of my office to say good morning. I didn't know him that well. I was working in an office in Auckland, New Zealand, where I grew up, in New Zealand at least, working in Auckland. And kind of high-powered professional sort of environment, wasn't very happy at all. But I just remember Paul, I can't remember his surname, Paul, looking round the window into my office every morning pretty much saying hello. Friendly, nice chap. And then one day we heard that he and his wife in their small car got clipped by another car on the motorway, rolled, burned, gone. And it was just like this person who I didn't know so well, but had a kind of a friendly, collegial relationship with, and just gone. Just gone. And it was like, what's that? So he's gone. You know, what's that? And he didn't come and stick his head around and say hello in the morning anymore. And that sense of that everyday contact was just gone. And that wasn't someone particularly close to me. But it's like just that sense of the, it can just happen like that. And not long after, another friend who was just walking with us, with someone else, some other companion, and just standing right there in the room in full health, early 30s, wife and young child, and he just fainted and fell to the ground and died right there, just like that, from full, perfect, complete health and vigor of life to dead. Small blood vessel burst in his brain, and just whoosh, within minutes he was gone. No warning, no health issues to speak of. And of course the tragedy for his wife and rather dear daughter and friends around, including myself, a sense of, he's John, he's gone, just gone. And just so like that, again. Not even the impingement of some outside, like the car accident I'm referring to, I was said before, but just someone, just the body's functionality, this incredibly finely balanced, delicate mechanism with so many different things that have to be just so. And one of them isn't. Just a weakness in the tissue and the wall of a vein that just happened to be in the brain. And then, and the very pressure of blood that keeps us alive at the heart pumping strong, in that instance, is one's death. From that through, and just you know, where are the places we've encountered ourselves in your own lives? The people, close or not so close. That sense of, oh, gone, just suddenly gone. And times we might realize, oh, could have almost, didn't quite, but survived. Again, a story of a friend who told me about just walking through this beautiful old building and just walking through and admiring the amazing architecture, wonderful shapes and designs. And he said, and just as we walked through the door out, the ceiling just, and the roof just came to top. Demolished everything in the room. And just the sense of, you know, but for the chance of 2 seconds or three, that they were outside the room and no longer in it. They were gone. They would have been dead. And I sometimes think, driving on a road at the, you know, what we call reasonable speeds of 60, 70 miles an hour. 60 miles an hour, another car coming towards you at 60 miles an hour. And just the fineness of really a few feet or yards between you or meters, that if something goes wrong, for either of you or either of your vehicles, and you happen to meet someone at a closing speed of 120, you know, even with modern safety features on cars, high likelihood that that's just gone. That's it. If you're so unfortunate that that would happen. And yet, you know, we just do it every day, don't we? We don't even think about the fact we get into one of those little tin boxes and go whizzing along the road. I don't, usually. Unless I stop and reflect. That, oh, we're actually that close to it. We're that close to it. The soft human body is subject to aging, to illness, to death. The soft human body. Do we notice how it's soft? It's got some hard bony bits in it, but those are the bits that are left afterwards, aren't they? It's soft, it's tender, it's vulnerable. What's it like just to reflect on that, to let that in? Oh, oh yeah, that softness that allows it to be something quite sweet, quite lovely in many ways. That's also what expresses its mortality. It's not here foreverness, this body. And yet, somehow we get that and we don't get it, isn't it? Like we know, and no one here comes in thinking this isn't how it is in our minds, but do we get and do we live by this? That's really the question. The inevitability of death. When any one of us, if asked, would say, of course, for sure, it must be so. And not just those of us here who may be actively interested in spiritual practice or this topic, but anybody. After, I don't know at which point kids have been, you know, introduced to that sort of the realities of Father Christmas and the Easter Bunny and the fact that death actually happens, you know. But at some point, we get it. You know, it's sort of this compassionate thing of getting pets for children so they'll see something die. I've heard it expressed that way. So they'll actually get, oh yeah, that happens. It's a real thing because the idea doesn't make sense. To some part of us. And so there's this wonderful teaching from the Bhagavad Gita where the central character or hero, Arjuna, is having a conversation with Krishna, who's his charioteer in the story. And he asks Krishna, and Krishna's in this, an embodiment of and representation of wisdom. He says, when you look with your vast vision into the world and the universe, what is the greatest miracle that you see? And Krishna responds to Arjuna. He says, the greatest miracle in the whole universe is that although people everywhere see others around them dying, they do not believe it will happen to themselves. We do not believe it will happen to ourselves. Intellectually, you might have some sense of it. But in terms of what's more fundamental, there's a real resistance to taking that on, to taking that in, to letting ourselves be impacted. And so the Buddha encouraged and suggested that we contemplate this body's reality, this body's existence. And he put it in quite a... He put it in quite a particular way. And it's in the context, interestingly, of the foundations of mindfulness, the Buddha's teachings on meditation. We often think of meditation as something about kind of being really calm and very quiet and very still and watching the breath, or maybe contemplating our, you know, moment-to-moment experience. And it is very much that and includes that. And yet, central theme within the practice of mindfulness and the Buddha's teachings on mindfulness and meditation is actively bringing to mind and contemplating one's death as part of what it means to know the truth of our body. It's part of what it means. And so from the Satipatthana Sutta, he talks about what it called the nine charnel ground contemplations. Now, it's often suggested that the instruction is to go and do this. Now, it's not necessary that you have to go and do it, as in go and sit with dead bodies, although it can be a really interesting and powerful practice. But to actually bring to mind, to contemplate that possibility, and the language says, as though one were to see a corpse thrown aside on a charnel ground. And we don't have such places where bodies are thrown. Maybe we might see them in the relative sort of tidiness of a funeral parlour. But in a charnel ground where they might be one or two or three days dead, bloated, livid, oozing matter. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? And one would say of one's own body, oh, this body too is of the same nature. It will be like this for me. It will not escape this fate. And, you know, probably the closest we'll come to that is to see an animal killed on the side of the road 1 day, 2 days, 3 days before. And just look and see, oh, yeah. And, you know, doesn't smell good. Doesn't look good. I remember once on a cycle trip on Dartmoor, cycling up a quite steep part of the hill. Of a hill, and just at a certain point where the lungs are just really puffing and panting, there was a dead badger, and the was full of the dead badger. It was like, oh, you know, it's like, wow, really taking it. Normally one sort of just breathes really shallow and tries to hold one's breath in that place. It was like, and you know, if you know a little bit about biology and chemistry or whatever it is, that actually that smell is molecules of that actual material that are floating around in the air that you've just sucked, you know, fully into one's own body. And it's like, oh, disgusting. And you know, even to this day, when Catherine and I are out, we have this expression of, you know, badgered. It means not the usual something annoying you, but actually, you know, having taken in that smell so fully, the impact of it. And the most recent time I saw a badger dead on the road, I was out running, and it had been recently killed. It didn't smell bad at all, and its whole body was there. As you could see, it had been hit around the head. Its body was fine, its head was bloody, One of its eyes went out. And just noticing my responses to it as I was there. And I was running up a hill at that time, so going relatively slowly. And just the sense of, and at the same time, the sense of, I can actually like these creatures. I've seen them in the night. And I remember once having this wonderful experience on sitting up all night at a monastery on the full moon night, and the badgers running through the grounds and just doing walking meditations. The badger running straight towards me as if I wasn't there. And it was like, wow, I'm afraid. And at least it was. I was a bit sort of, but just how beautiful. And yet seeing this dead being, my response of just, and just at the same time trying to tune into the, dear creature. And actually the urge to pick it up and take it and place it under the hedgerow, under a tree, in a place where it wouldn't just be run over and flattened and pancaked onto the road. And just seeing what that was, in the sense of, you know, the urge to want to put on gloves, or not having gloves, I'm out going running, and just, okay, so touch this creature, pick it up, feel what that's like for me. I have to talk myself into it a little bit. Not just out of compassion for the creature, which was there, but also out of the wish to let myself feel what that is. You know, and it's not happened for me, but I've heard from friends about what it's like to care for, to clean, to wash the body of a recently deceased loved one, and how it's something incredibly beautiful, and at the same time perhaps also challenging. And that, and just that, the kind of practicing, oh yes, this body is of the same nature. It will be like that for me. I'm not exempt from that fate. I'm not. And so one's invited to contemplate one's body, this body. And the Buddha goes on that one can contemplate or reflect on the body to see a corpse, as it was in the time of the Buddha, just thrown on a charnel ground, not buried. And how it would be being devoured by crows, hawks, vultures, dogs, jackals, or various kinds of worms. Just, you know, we wrap it in a box before that happens, put it away. My friend Colin, who was buried in the ground 5-6 days ago, and his body's wrapped, and it was a natural burial, so it's a wicker box, it's not too solid, it's not going to keep the worms out that long. And you just said that body will be eaten by little creatures, consumed. And the Buddha says, you know, contemplate, this will happen to this body. This body will be food for creatures. Now maybe we'll be choosing, if we have the opportunity to choose, to be incinerated as opposed to that. But one way or another, we go back into the earth, into the elements. And you know, to contemplate a skeleton with flesh and blood held together by sinews, or fleshless, without flesh, without blood, disconnected bones, here a hand bone, there a foot bone, here a shin bone. Again, the Buddha's words, and I know for myself, walking out on Dartmoor sometimes and coming across the carcass of a sheep, and sometimes fresh and bloody, as when I was leading a walking retreat on Dartmoor over Easter, and we came across a sheep that had been either killed by, or after having died, been found by some wild creature that had ripped out its throat and belly, and it was kind of like, it's right there. And at other points, the corpse, or the skeleton of a sheep, where you could really see all the bits together. And in other places, walking up in an open, natural space like that, where it's not being tidied up afterwards, finding just a bone, this bit of a bone, or that bit of a bone, you have the sense of it just, and reflecting, oh yeah, this will happen to me. It feels a little bit less confronting when it's not a human body. And yet, even that, kind of, we aren't so close even to the life and death of creatures around us. And the Buddha's invitation to see, this body is of that nature. It will not escape from this. To see bones bleached white, turning to dust. Powder, dust to dust. Whether over the time of the passage of years or through the inferno of a fire. That sense of this body will go that way. This body. And it's like we can say it and we can hear it and I can hear it and say it. But how fully do we let that in? What happens if we do? So just to take a moment. I will not escape this. What's it like to reflect on that? To contemplate that? I too am subject to death. So just allowing yourself to just see, what is it to turn towards that? To notice where you might resist, or sure, I know, kind of sort of package it up a little tidily as an idea. Death is not an idea or a concept. The language is, certainly, but what we're talking about is not that. So there's a invitation here. In a way that you've offered to yourself and that I'm supporting by bringing yourself here and that I'm supporting in terms of inviting you to step more fully into what that is. And as I say that, trust your sense or your experience of what happens. It's not like you have to suddenly have some, oh my God, I'm going to die, oh woe is me, kind of, oh, it's all whatever that might. Whatever the experience for you that happens is okay. Notice where you might be a little bit sort of not quite there. That's okay. Notice where you are in this. That's always what's going to be important. Rather than trying to push yourself into something, some place. You and I, we will not escape these bodies. We will not avoid. These bodies will not avoid coming to that ending that we call death. And so, this contemplation. There's a epitaph carved on a tombstone in Norfolk, which I haven't seen, but I've read about and heard of, that someone chose to use their tombstone in the graveyard as their last message, and I think it's remarkable and beautiful how it's expressed. It says, remember, friend, as you pass by, as you are now, so once was I. As I am now, so you must be. Prepare yourself to follow. And I love that as an expression of what one leaves behind. It's kind of really a gift for everyone who might hear or read those words. Prepare yourself to follow me. So this reflection is about preparing ourselves. That there's something about living our life in the light of death with a consciousness of that, that actually is both the preparation for death, but it's equally the preparation for life, because life is only fully alive when it's lived with that knowledge. That the safety and the apparent security that we generate through not contemplating, through not reflecting, through not allowing ourselves to be impacted in this way, is actually only a half aliveness and equally a half asleepness in our lives. And when we might wonder how it is that we can see around us so many people that seem sleepwalking, and we can discover ourselves at times, of course, sometimes sleeping through our lives and wonder how that could be, it's because we haven't kept close enough or brought close enough this contemplation, this reflection that cuts through that sleepiness, that sleepwalking, that taking for granted and that kind of looking for something cozy and soft to snuggle up in, which we call security, which doesn't exist in real terms. And so the Buddha's invitation as lay people, 5 daily reflections, to remember, to reflect on this, is one of those things that the Buddha spoke of. To reflect that I am subject to death, that I will not escape this. To come back to that on a daily basis was his instruction. I am of the nature to age, to sicken and to die. You too. Me and you, us, we are that. So I just want to invite you for a moment to take a moment and look around. You don't have to look into people's eyes, but just take a moment and look around to see who's here. All these human beings, we are of this nature, to age, to sicken, to die. In fact, I was recently reading a translation that didn't say sicken. I prefer it. It says to decay. To age, to decay. That's why it's in that order. Sickness happens all through our life, but decay happens in the aging process. Decay. Decay is when some bits of us don't wait for the rest of us when they die. Bits that just die first. Whether teeth or mental functions like memory, bodily functions like mobility or bowel movement or control. Bits decay. Like bits die before the whole thing dies. We call that decay. And ultimately the whole thing dies. And an easy number in 100 years, none of us will be here. None of us will be here. Might be a few of us here 50 or 60 years, but maybe not. So there's this to contemplate, to reflect on, and we're going to take a little time now for that. But just before I give you the instruction for that, which will involve going outside and just spending some time with yourselves, reflecting, contemplating in this way, there's a beautiful quote from the French philosopher Guyou, who said, I haven't studied philosophy or even read this particular person, but I heard this quote from another teacher of mine and really liked it. He said, if we know but we do not act accordingly, then we know imperfectly. It makes sense? So we think we know we're going to die. We say, of course, I know that. But if we're not living according to that truth, then our knowledge is not complete, is not full, is not actually informing. We're not living and breathing that knowledge. And so, this contemplation. I just want you to try in your mind, if you haven't already, the phrase, I too am going to die. Just notice what that's like. If you close your eyes and just speak it to yourself and just sense what it's like for you, what it evokes for you or doesn't evoke for you. I too am going to die. This body will not escape death. Well, this body too will be subject to death. Just noticing how it lands, as if you were to drop a pebble into a pond and just let yourself be in touch with the ripples. There may be big ripples or small, or maybe it feels like not much at all. But just what is that? To just gently contemplate. And then when the ripples have faded, taking a breath and dropping the pebble in again. I too am going to die. This body also will come to decay and death inevitable. So, just staying in contact with that reflection, that contemplation. But what we're going to do now is take half an hour to just be with yourselves. If you'd like to go and perhaps walk around, you might need to visit the toilet or have a drink of water or something. Don't get involved with other things. Don't start looking at your machinery or technology and, you know, emails or whatever else following you around if you haven't managed to turn them off. Stay with yourself. You might like to walk around, you might like to go out to the park and do a little walking meditation or just contemplative wandering. You might like to take your shoes off and let the bare skin of your body feel the earth and the grass or the tarmac and the stones. That sensitive human body in contact with the environment. Just that little bit of stripping away one layer of defense, protection, comfort, security that we call footwear, which is fine and useful, but if you like, you might find that supportive. And then we'll come back in about half an hour, and we'll come and we'll take some time to sit together again, quietly. Just letting it settle, letting yourself stay with it. You might find yourself some of the time with the sense of your body as it moves or your breathing when we're sitting. But the primary intention is just coming back to this contemplation. The sense of, even though we say I know and yes of course and if yes it's true, but just coming back to yes, and I too am subject to death. This body also will not escape aging, sickness and death, decay and demise. Be gentle with yourself if it touches on places that are uncomfortable for you. Don't try and push yourself into anything here. But so far as you can, just inviting yourself to come more deeply into contact with this truth. Does that feel reasonably clear for you in terms of an instruction? So staying with the silence and being with oneself, though of course if you need to negotiate something in a bathroom or a doorway where you end up saying hello, thank you, excuse me, whatever, that's all fine. But the importance is to come back, to stay with this. And if you slip off and start thinking about other things, see if you can bring yourself back. Is everyone okay in terms of keeping track of their own time? So that we'll come back in for about 12 or just after, so maybe 5 past 12, if you can intend to arrive back by then. And we'll continue. Thank you.